this is the second part of Jess's gorgeous story. If you haven't already tuned into the first part, make sure you head back to listen to that first. Here's Jess.
I had another appointment at another scan at 36 weeks. And then that was when my midwife said, look, he is measuring pretty big. And I had mild polyhydramnios, which is too much fluid around baby, which kind of carries its own risks. But my main ones were that you could have a possible cord prolapse. So cord comes out first, which is like major. My midwife said the only thing like cause for concern is post-delivery. It's more common to have like quite severe postpartum hemorrhaging. She said, I can manage that. Like, I can totally have that under control. I'm only telling you because it is one of the more common risks. But she said, we watch it before we intervene. She said, it's not something that we have to go straight in and be like, okay, this is a problem. She said, that's my job. That's up to me to watch that. I wasn't worried that I was possibly delivering a LGA baby, like a large gestational baby. And I was like, not worried about it. Mm. So casual. Like, went into 39 weeks, still totally like, wasn't nervous about giving birth or scared about giving birth. My mom was kind of, I think, preparing on the sidelines. So she came with me to my appointments and I said, well, I wanted mom at my labor, so you can come to my appointments, meet my midwife. And I think my mom was kind of preparing. She was a bit like, I think maybe we should possibly think if you have a cesarean. I was like, no, not worried about it. My midwife hasn't brought it up, not worried about it. So I didn't really think about it. And then my midwife did say, look, because baby's measuring like estimated 4.5 kilos, you have to be referred to the obstetrics team so that they're aware. And my midwife reassured me. She said, I've dealt with quite a few cases of shoulder dystocia. She said, it's obviously entirely your decision whether you want to opt for a cesarean. She said they don't encourage or recommend a reason for induction being a large estimated baby, which I quite like.
That's amazing. She never
once said, she said, unless it's your decision. She said, if it's what you really want to do, she said, you can bring it up to the obstetrician. And she said, I'll still be with you throughout the whole thing, but it's just that I now need to refer and let them know that you're kind of on their watch list. Wasn't stressed about it, which is not really like me. I'm probably more the person that would like, oh my God, something's not right. No, I need to do this. I'm kind of like over-prepared in every situation. And in this situation, I was like, no, totally fine. I feel amazing. And I went into, well, I didn't actually know, spontaneous labor, just for my due date, just for 40 weeks. And I'd sort of woken up in the middle of the night and I had mild sort of pains and they started becoming regular enough to take note, which is really interesting. Part of the conversations with my midwife leading up to it was a bit of a birth plan. I said, I don't really have one. At that point, I had to deliver at the hospital. So I was probably more wanting to deliver in the hospital. We discussed things like pain relief and my midwife was really open with things like aromatherapy and natural things. Amazing. And water, and really good that she gave me all of those options and said, this is what I'm comfortable with. Let me know what you're comfortable with. It's all on a piece of paper that she has and that's in my folder. And it also goes with her backup midwife. So they had weekends about. I met her as well so that I was kind of comfortable. She wasn't showing up and first time meeting her sort of thing. And that comes down to even things like if you're wanting to administer like the vitamin K injection after birth, things like delayed cord clamping, which in the hospital here is standard. Things like, skin to skin after birth, starting breast, like would you like to start breastfeeding straight after birth? Like, they do give you all of these options. And then she kind of says, this is usually what happens, or say, ideally what happens. What do you think? What's your sort of thoughts on it? Which was really good because I obviously had no idea, didn't really know.
And it's so great that the options were kind of laid out for you as opposed to you having to research the options and then go in and ask the questions. That's so powerful.
Exactly. And especially it's not just on a pamphlet. Like, I had a folder that I was given at the start of my pregnancy. I don't think I read any of the pamphlets, to be fair. You get so much information, but actually having them all there and then my midwife saying you can add or take or choose to do whatever. Even things like monitoring or people coming into the room, you can like write on this piece of paper, tick some things, and it's all just there.
Brilliant.
So that other people know as well. So I had labored at home for a little while. Wasn't regular contractions. They were varying and only happened when I was laying down, which is just wild to me that I went 3 days like that. I had only contractions at night when I laid down. And then like the next day I'd be up going to the grocery shop, walking around, no contractions. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is happening? And then I'd try and go to bed at night, same thing. And then they started getting a bit closer. They probably got to about 5 minutes, but then they would extend back out to 10, 12, 15 minutes. And then my husband actually rang my midwife because I was a bit emotional at that point. And then my mum, because I had my mum, my nan and my sister over here staying with us. Incredible. Jamie rung the midwife and was like, do you mind if we come down? Jess has had a couple of nights where she's been up. She's not getting a lot of sleep. And my midwife was like, yep, like come down. And this was the 22nd of December, Archie's birthday, and right before Christmas. One of the things that we learned in antenatal classes was that you can't just show up at the hospital without contacting your LMC because they're your carer, they're your lead carer.
Okay.
They sort of said if you show up at the maternity centre, it's not that you're going to be turned away, but they can't really do a lot because they're not your main carer. Obviously, in emergency, that sort of thing, you will be seen. It's not that you'll be turned away, but they said any decisions kind of come down to your LMC. And she just happened to be down at the hospital. She's like, we'll put you in for some monitoring. And I had nothing. There was nothing on the CTG. I was like poking him and like, oh my, like, what are you doing? And as soon as she seen me, she was like, oh, you look how I feel after like being up for 6 days. She was like, oh goodness me. She's like, I'm going to go and like rest, because as soon as she seen me, I think she was like, oh nope, you're not
having a baby,
you're not going anywhere. I had monitoring, nothing. He was like, heartbeat was just this perfect trace, contractions were like flat. I was like, what are you doing? Like, we've been doing this for 4 days. My midwife's really good where she like never sort of pushed for stretch and sweeps or said that it was necessary, like she was happy to kind of lead with what I wanted to do. And I was like, no, I'm fine with that. I'm happy to just let things kind of go. And then she said, if you don't mind, I'll examine you. She said, I don't want to do it, kind of judge anything or to get things going. She said, I'll just check before you go, because I was just going to go home at that point. I hadn't had any contractions, but I just was like, felt terrible, looked terrible, no sleep. And then she checked me and I was 8 centimeters dilated. Yeah.
Oh, 8 centimeters.
The funny thing is when we'd packed to go to the hospital, Mom was like, just put your bags in the car. I was like, no, we're not having this baby. I'm probably not even going to be 1 centimeter, like full meltdown mode. And my mom was probably like, oh, okay, I'm just going to put them in the bag. I was like, do whatever you want. I don't care. And then anyway, rung my mum at the hospital. I was like, oh, I'm 8 centimeters. And I'm thinking, like, I'm going to have my baby by lunchtime. Like, this was, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to have my baby at, like, 1 o'clock. And then my midwife broke my waters, nothing. Didn't progress, nothing. No contractions. I was like, what is going on? And I was exhausted. And Archie was tracking fine. Like, all my traces were good. I wasn't examined again for quite a few hours. But the only thing was that sort of looking back, I think it was the consultant came in and gave me an ultrasound, a portable ultrasound. And the first thing you seen on this ultrasound was two eyes facing upwards out. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And already like tracing quite big. Like mum had sort of thought at that point, she was like, I don't think she's having, she didn't say this to me at the time, thank God. She was like, oh, I don't think that baby's coming out. And nobody said that to me. They were kind of like, he's not in an ideal position, but that doesn't mean that he won't move. He needs to come down a bit further. And like that was all sort of reassuring. And I was fine at that point, tried some gas. Yeah, that was at 1 o'clock, I think it was. And then I'd kind of gone right through to 6 p.m. just having gas. And I'd laid down for a rest and was having super contractions, like really intense, but not regular. So I had to be hooked up to a drip to try and regulate my contractions.
Mm-hmm.
But I never progressed past 9 centimeters from that whole time, from like 1 till 6 p.m. I think it was. And he just was not in an optimal position. And I remember talking to my midwife before, she was like, if things aren't progressing how we would like, I'm not going to push you. I'm not going to push you past the point or keep going with something if you're not comfortable with it. We kind of already know these things with the excess fluid and the size of baby. She said, we won't push you. I was like, yep, totally fine. I agree with that. And then, yeah, the decision was made to have a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point I was like, please, yes, please. I just had enough. I was spent.
Mm.
And I don't think I would have had the energy even to be able to push him out. And that's not to say I doubted myself, but it was just, I was exhausted. I had nothing left. And I kind of hadn't even got to the hard part really with pushing, you know. I'd just been laboring and contracting and it just kept happening and happening. And nothing else really. So ended up having an emergency C-section and he was born. And he was born 4.4 kilos, 9 pound 11. So big boy. Funny thing was, like, because obviously being awake during a surgery, and I don't remember like being worried. I think I was relieved actually as soon as I had like my spinal, I was like, oh yes, thank you. I'm at peace. I am ready for this. I was just done.
Yeah.
Which is not how I thought I would be. Like, it was classified as an emergency cesarean, but I knew that I'd done everything that I could and I could not have done anything else. It wasn't taken out of my hands. Like it is with so many other women who, you know, they don't progress and they're kind of like really defeated. And I get that. Like that's totally valid. And for me, it was like almost the opposite. I was like, no, that's it. I'm done. You know, I've done everything I could. I haven't failed. I get to meet my baby. And that's all I said to the obstetrician underneath. Just, I was like, I just want to meet my baby. So that's all I want to do now. Like, that's it. Get him out. Let me see him, sort of thing.
And did you have time before you went in to talk that process over? So what was going to happen or any options that you had in theatre, or was that quite a quick process from deciding to going in?
It was quite a long wait. Obviously it was my decision. I had to make that decision and okay it and sign the forms. I still find it so crazy that they allow women to sign the forms when they're in like the throes of labour. I've got no idea you never know what you're signing. And obviously it's consent forms and like, you know, blood transfusions and that kind of thing if it's needed. I would love to see my signature actually, what it looked like on the piece of paper, because it's intense. But they ask you at every step. So I was asked by my midwife. I said, yep. Then the obstetrician comes in. He asks. I was like, yep. You get wheeled up to theatre and then the like theatre nurse says, do you know what you're up here for? Like, what's your name, dad, birth, all of this stuff. You're asked quite a few times along the process. Is this what you want? You're not being like pushed into this decision. Is this what you want to do? I was like, yep, this is it. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Let's go, sort of thing. Then, it was over. And that's the thing, it was over so quickly. He was out so quickly. And the surgical team were amazing. They were so good to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I almost kind of remember this like light sort of feeling to the room, but I suppose that was just me. Because I was like, this is happening. I've agreed to this. My husband, I think, he's pretty traumatized by it. But yeah, it was overall a really good experience in the fact that it wasn't what I'd planned or what I had envisioned for my labor. Mm. But I was like okay with that at the same time. I was happy with that.
What was that like, those first few moments with Archie?
It was really surreal because being obviously C-section, you can't see a lot. He made some noise, like was sort of, I could hear him and see like where he was laying. But I remember looking at Jamie, like, can you see him? Like, you know, is it a boy or a girl or, you know, and yeah, obviously he's a little boy and sort of came over and his eyes, he was wide awake. He was looking around and like had his little fists up and I was like, oh my God, like he's here, like he's finally here. And the whole like recovery process, he was with us the whole time. He had a bit of a scare with his heart rate, so we weren't able to do sort of like straight away like skin on skin. He had to be checked first. Mm-hmm. And being the size that he was, they needed to make sure that his results were good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great. He was perfect. And then we got wheeled down to our room. And our families were all there still waiting. So that was really cool. Like I had Archie tucked under my arm in bed and they get to keep you there. And it's really important, like, it was to the midwife as well, was I got to have skin on skin with Archie and that's what I wanted, and initiate breastfeeding within the first hour of birth and that kind of thing. So she knew that that was important and part of what we'd spoken about. Obviously I couldn't really do much. So my midwife was doing it for me. She put Archie on one side. He like latched straight on and then would like take him off, put him on the other side, make sure, you know, like both sides were comfortable for him, or, you know, that he could do both sides, that kind of thing. And then, yeah, he was on me for pretty much the whole night, kind of just feeding and, you know, suckling, that kind of thing. And I obviously couldn't move, so like Jamie had to do all of the first like nappy changes. Yeah. And I remember looking over at one point, like, what are you doing? There was, I'd packed the baby bag, and like, as you do, it's like this whole process for yourself. Yeah. I don't think there was anything left in the baby bag by the time he'd like tried to find a nappy and some wipes. So it's kind of like, what do they even look like, kind of thing. It was great for him, and I think he actually really liked that he could do that, because I feel like it probably would have been me otherwise. And like, he got to stay with me. And yeah, the first night was a bit sort of strange. I remember Jamie went and got the nurse and was like, "Can do you want to come and like check on the baby? You know, yeah. like, do you want to make sure that we've put it in a bed or that it's like safe?"
Yeah.
So we were like, we don't know. And she was like, yeah, like he looks fine, you know. He was just like laying in his little bassinet thing.
Yeah.
It's, I suppose, like a rural setting. There's a lot of farmland down where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can be transferred to the maternity centre.
Oh, amazing.
And it's incredible. I had no idea this was even a thing. And you come out here, which is in the same town that we live in, and it's like a house essentially. Yeah. So cozy. You've got like a little lounge, kitchen area, and four rooms. The rooms have double beds. They've got a feeding chair, feeding pillows, bassinet. They provide all of the nappies, wipes, your maternity pads.
Wow.
They can do your washing. Honestly, it's incredible. It is such an asset to this like part of New Zealand. It's honestly amazing. People would rave about it before I was there. Mm. And then when I got to experience it, I was like, goodness, this is what it should be like everywhere.
Absolutely.
This shouldn't be a luxury. It should be what everybody gets to experience, because Jamie can stay. You're in an environment where you've got nurses on hand, and most of them have like pediatric training or like infant training. All the meals are provided. You literally tell them, "I'm ready for breakfast." And the first like couple of times, Jamie and I were like, "Oh my God, we feel so like mean," being like, "Can we have breakfast now, please?" And like, you're free to come and go as you please. So we on Christmas Day sort of felt a bit strange. We were like, "Are we allowed to leave? Like, we're obviously not like here against our will, but can we leave?" And so we got to have Christmas Day with my family at our house, and then went back to the maternity centre.
Oh.
Amazing. So good. Oh, and my midwife did daily visits for the first week.
Amazing.
And she even came to like, she came to my house on Christmas Day and did like checks over Archie and got to meet all my family and stuff. So it's real like integration into your family and like postpartum care, which is so vital. Like, it's I wish everyone got to experience that, and it makes me sad that that's not what it's like.
Yeah.
And the hospital was obviously comfortable with discharging me because I was going to maternity care.
Mm-hmm.
I would have probably had to stay an extra day, especially having a C-section, but they knew that I could be monitored just as closely out at the birth center. So they administer all of your medication, and they you can be like, they give you sort of some things to help with feeding, and they're really like experienced with helping with established feeding as well, which I'm so grateful for, because it's that first sort of three nights. Those first couple of nights are like a blur, and you're not having to worry about anything. And they hear baby crying, and they'll come in and be like, "Do you want a Milo? Or I can heat up your heat packs." Like, it's honestly incredible. I cannot rave about it enough. And it's all completely funded for us. Like, I didn't have to pay a cent.
Oh, Jess, that sounds so magical. What a special time.
Mm-hmm. It really was. It was so good. And especially I was ready to get home, because I had mum and nan and my sister there. Mm. So I sort of knew that support was waiting at home. Yeah, it's incredible service to especially our little community down here. It's amazing.
Yeah. And let's talk about postpartum. How were you tracking with your physical recovery?
I felt quite good. I obviously had it was unexpected having the C-section, but it was the getting around. I couldn't even put my pants on for the first couple of days. Like, I meant to look after this baby,
but
I couldn't put my pants on. And I needed help when I first was at hospital. I needed help showering, but it's more so that they can be there if, because you haven't, obviously you've been laboring and then you've been in surgery and you have had a spinal epidural. So you're not all sort of strength there anyway, and you just need help just in case. But I was like, I'm having someone else like washing my hair and holding me, but I'm supposed to be caring for a tiny infant. Like, yes. What? This is wild.
Yes.
But my post, I healed really well. And like I said, my midwife came daily visits for a week, and then she's sort of every like few days, like 3 to 5 days, she can come more. And these are all home visits as well. So you don't have to worry about getting to hospital or getting to somewhere else. And then that's right up until 6 weeks. So I had pretty well constant monitoring for my C-section, for feeding, breastfeeding, that sort of thing. I think that's really important, like, because you're always having that one person coming to check. And it's one thing having like your husband or your partner and family members or friends, but to have that one person, you're like, okay, my midwife's coming in tomorrow or the next day, I'll make sure I ask that question to her. Whereas if you didn't have that, like, where do people go? Like, what do they do? They do?
Mm.
And for me, I was like, it was just something that was there, which I'm so grateful for, that it was there. And I really rate that for my breastfeeding experience. I had a really great introduction into breastfeeding. I didn't have any like pain, or I got shown like a few different positions to hold him.
Amazing.
Because he was obviously quite big, but he was still a newborn, like couldn't hold anything up, you know, still really vulnerable. But it was sort of things started getting a bit rocky towards when my mum and that were due to leave, which was around 4 weeks. And your midwife is there, but she obviously can't diagnose any like health problems or issues. It is up to them to kind of, not up to them, but they can help in terms of, I think maybe it might be time to book a doctor's appointment, or here's, you know, lactation consultants' contact details, or, you know, this is probably something else you can look into. Like, they are there to give that information. And that's exactly what I got from her. She said, I suggest like booking an appointment with your GP, because I'd had a couple of bouts of mastitis, and she was able to prescribe, so they can prescribe like antibiotics and sort of things relating to your care. Yeah, around sort of 6 weeks, Archie was really spilly. I had huge amounts of milk. Like, when my milk came in, I was like, oh, my goodness, like, what is happening to my body? Like, what is going on here? And that sort of settled down, and I kind of got into a rhythm. But I was healing really well in terms of my C-section, and like sort of physically I was fine, but it was just my milk I really struggled with. I had so much of it. And I was feeding on demand, which is to, you know, establish breastfeeding. And then I kind of was like, I've established breastfeeding because I have so much milk. And in one way, people were sort of like, you know, that I spoke to and saying, like, how's everything going? Or like, how's your breastfeeding sort of going? I was like, it's good. Like, he feeds really well, and I'm able to have enough. I don't have to supplement feeds or anything. But I said, I've just got so much. And they were like, that's amazing that you're doing so well. But I didn't feel like I was. I was like, I feel like this is an issue. Again, never even knew that that was a thing, that you could have an oversupply. And I had a really forceful letdown. So when I would experience my letdown sensation, it was honestly like my whole body was like tingling, like, it just calming down, and it would flood Archie and get milk everywhere. And he was obviously quite big, but he was putting on weight really well. But he was spilling a lot, and he was really unsettled, really squirmy, and didn't like being put down, which, again, newborns generally don't anyway. Like, they're not in a routine. They're, you know, new to this world. And I was kind of like torn between wanting to feed on demand and be there for my baby and know that I'm not going to get a lot of sleep. Like, lack of sleep's kind of part of, like, you know, that postpartum period and just trying to heal. But also, like, I'm not really coping with this. And that can make you feel really crappy, because I should be enjoying this part, and I can breastfeed, and I am healing really well, and I do have like a lot of support. But at the same time, I was kind of on like a bit of a slow sort of decline. And that's when I was discharged from my midwife care, and at that point she said, book an appointment with your GP, chat to him about all the things that Archie's experiencing. She said, I do think it could be reflux, especially with what you're describing, and kind of everything else that's going on. And she said, they will be able to help you. And I had a really amazing GP, which I put it down to having him, my trusted GP previously and then, mm-hmm. but him in general, sort of saved a lot of my sanity, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I remember going to him, and you ask a lot of questions to people. If they ask you how things are going, you know, if you're at a barbecue or friends' places or downtown or, you know, family events, and we had quite a lot over Christmas, New Year, January sort of thing. And it was all this like, oh my God, it must be so amazing and you must be so loved up and, you know, how amazing is it having a newborn and they're so sweet and snuggly and like, you know, beautiful. And they, like Archie was, he was a beautiful baby. But I struggled to feel that. So when people would sort of describe it to me, I'm like, well, yeah, like I can relate because I know those feelings. I know those feelings of love and amazing and cuddly and, yes, I'm holding my baby and, yes, I'm feeding him. But yeah. I didn't have this like wave of like, oh, my goodness, I love my baby so much. Like, yeah. Oh, like that feeling. I never got that. So that was part of it as well. And then I had these sort of milk challenges and possible reflux, but being a new mum, am I overthinking things? Am I looking into it? Babies spill, babies cry, like all this stuff. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Did anyone at any point flag that there might be additional support you could seek for your emotional health, or was it really focusing?
Not at that point, no. It was really focusing on getting my feeding issues and my milk issues with Archie sort of sorted. And like I said, that was the crossover of leaving my midwife's care and going to my GP. And I remember the first appointment with my GP, he sort of asked how everything was going, and I was like, you know, I'm not sleeping very well and I don't feel like I'm doing that great, I said, in general, which was kind of how I was feeling in that moment. And Jamie came to the appointment with me because I was in like a, you know, newborn sleep deprived blur of things. So Jamie came with me. And I sort of looked at Jamie when I was sitting there and I was like, said to my GP, I don't know if I love my baby sort of thing. And he was like, Jamie kind of looked at me and was like, I was, you know, I don't know how to describe sort of the look that he gave me, but it was like, what are you sort of, like, I didn't know any of this. And then my GP said to me, and I had spoken to him obviously about Archie's spilling, and he was really unhappy. He was really unhappy, not all the time, but he was generally unhappy, unsettled, wouldn't sleep, spill all the time, fussy feeding, like he was getting drowned in milk. It was just a lot of kind of things adding up. And I said to my GP, I feel like I'm just a crazy first-time mum who has no idea what she's talking about, no idea what she's doing. I don't really feel that connected with my baby, like what's wrong with me sort of thing. And he was like, first off, I do think that there is something up here, as in like he was validating that it's not just me. And he said, and you know what? It is okay to not have that feeling. He said, I can totally understand the pressures from external sources that,
yeah.
And I hadn't even spoken to him about any of that, but he said, I get that.
Oh, that's
he
so
said,
good.
It's okay. He said, you don't have to. And he said, it can be hard when you're expected to feel a certain way, mm-hmm. or you think you'll feel a certain way, but you don't. And he said, it's not that you're not caring for your baby or that you're like, you know, not being a good mother, like you know, whatever that can be, but so it's not any of that. It's like, it's okay. And I was like, oh, my God. I looked at Jamie. I was like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not. And then from that point on, I had like quite regular appointments with my GP, and he sort of said, do you think it's the lack of sleep that's causing some of these feelings, or do you think it could possibly be something else? And he kind of came up with the plan, which – he didn't just say to me, well, what do you want to do? Because at that point I didn't know.
Yeah.
I had no idea. It was just validating that he said, let's let's start. Let's put a plan in. Let's, you know, get onto this. We'll try this if you're comfortable with it, which was some medication for Archie. Mm-hmm. I'll check in with you in a week's time. And I was like, yep, that's kind of given me another point to get to next week.
Yeah.
I'll see how this week goes. We'll try this. And then same thing, went in the following week. And he never sort of like, my GP never said any words like, you know, I think you have postnatal depression, or I think you have postnatal anxiety, or I think Archie has this. It was, these are the, you know, the issues that you're having, and this is how we can deal with them. So he never sort of like put me in a little, not a box, I suppose, but I was never sort of defined down to a one category. It was a let's address these issues wholly. We'll start with, you know, trying some medication with Archie. I do think he's showing signs of reflux or silent reflux. And he said, is common in babies of this age, you know, relating to colic and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, yep, I'm happy to do that. And at that point I was kind of like, okay, this is something I can do. Like, I can do this. Mm. I can administer some medication and see if it helps. And then Archie did finally start sleeping a little bit better. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, it's working. It was just so validating to be like, it's not, but there's not something wrong with me, and it's not a reflection on what I'm doing. It's, you know, I am doing okay. It's just one of these things that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful to my GP for that.
Oh, Jeff.
And for seeing me. I think I was about three or four weeks I've seen him, just for like follow-up appointments for both Archie and I. And he always made a point of that. He always said, we'll book a double appointment for Archie and yourself. So it was never just to say, okay, well, we need to see Archie again in a week, or need to just see you in a week. It was a collective thing. He wanted to help us both.
Oh, Jess.
And it was such a turning point, because I finally felt like I kind of had a handle on things. Like, I knew I had a lot of work to do, but I quite liked that, I was never sort of narrowed down to one. Not a problem. He never put it as a problem. So he's like, well, I'm not kind of making it into something that it's not.
Yeah. Actually. You were seen.
And that's all I wanted. It was, it was so like profound in that moment that I could sort of, that I did, it didn't get any worse. And I think it was also important having Jamie there, because he seen that part of it as well. And he said to me, like, I didn't know that that's how you felt. But I also was a bit scared to admit it as well. Like, you never really, and I sort of put it in the way, like I'd said, I don't really feel like I love my baby. I knew that I loved Archie, and I knew that I was like utterly obsessed with him, and I loved, you know, dressing him and hugging him and holding him, and I was doing all of that stuff. And externally I was looking like I was enjoying everything, but sort of behind I was like, I'm struggling. And I think that's what's hard, is you have to first admit that something isn't quite right. And that's also what something my GP said. I was like, and I said to him, for me, I don't feel like myself. I said, this isn't me. And he said, that's the most important part, is what's normal for other people, or what's normal for your neighbor or your mom or your sister or whatever, is not normal for you. And he said, if you're not feeling like yourself, that's something we can work with. And I was like, thank you. And that's kind of all I needed. It wasn't that I needed the validation from somebody else, but I did feel seen. Like, I knew that I could then heal from there. I knew I could go forward and be the person that I wanted to be for my baby. I was already being that person, but that I could see that.
Oh, Jess, that's so powerful.
And totally blindsided me. Like, never, ever thought that it would be something that I would experience or be going down the road of experiencing. And it was a very like unsettling sort of time, but I'm super grateful for the care that I had and the support that I had within my family and my GP, like my trusted like healthcare providers. And sometimes it makes me quite sad, like now being out the other side. Archie's two and a bit now, and I've had friends that have had babies who have, you know, been feeding in that postpartum time, And I've sort of made it my mission. I'm like, I never want another human or like woman or mum or family that I come across to feel like that, or for me to be a part of their life and to feel like that,
mm-hmm.
because it is normal. It's totally part of people's story, and it totally needs to be talked about and experienced. And if, you know, I can say one thing and somebody else is like, oh, she's like, you know, she knows it too, or she's yes, been through that too.
Absolutely.
It can vary from things like, oh, what nappies do you use, or what do you use for Archie to go to sleep at night? And you can rattle off like 100 different things, and that's what's so crazy, is what works for one person won't work for somebody else. But if you can even just give a little glimmer or something that you say or something that you do that shows somebody else that you're there,
yes,
is huge. It doesn't need to be profound, or it just to show that you're there.
Definitely. And just to reassure people that it's really freaking hard work, and it's not hard work because you're failing. It's hard work because it's really fucking hard. Like, it's huge. It is.
And it can really throw you. And that's exactly what it did for me. I obviously I don't think I went into parenthood thinking I would ace it, or like, I got this, I know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. I know what I can do, I know how to, you know, do all these things. It was the sort of the not knowing mm-hmm. mixed with the external factors, but then also wanting or needing support that you haven't previously needed.
Yes.
For a lot of other things, you can rely on yourself or your husband or your partner or a family member or a really trusted friend for certain things that you're doing. But I think with parenthood, you do need to ask a lot more, and that's mm-hmm. really hard, is mm-hmm. asking, hey, I'm struggling over here, or I can't do the things that I used to do, but I also want to do them, and I also need to look after a new baby, and yes, I have to sustain a marriage and, you know, do the housework, and do I go back to work? Like, it's a whole thing.
Yes, it's a completely different identity, but the way you speak about that, I guess that evolution of self is so beautiful, because it is, I don't know, I think there are levels of mourning the person you used to be while still being so yes, in love with the person you are now.
Yeah, it's 100%. And I do still think that obviously I am me from 2 years ago, obviously I'm the same person, but I am also entirely different. I view the world differently, mm-hmm. and how I carry myself and how I want to show up for myself and for other people is huge now. Like, I can extend so much compassion and hold space for other people in a capacity that I probably couldn't have before.
Mm.
And my people that I grew up with, or, you know, the people that are in your close circle of friends, I've been distanced from them for quite a few years, and it can be hard to maintain those connections through just on the phone, or yes, when they're extending their families and you see photos and things that they're doing, and
yeah,
they'll see the exact same thing from you. And then I have like beautiful friends over here that I see quite regularly, and like, they're just as important, and those relationships are just as important as the ones that I have in Australia. And I feel just as close to my friends in Australia that I do physically over here. And it can be a lot, but it's so worth it. It's so worth having those people that you trust, and that they can trust you, and being there for them.
Oh, it's so important. My goodness. I'm conscious of time, but talk to us about family life now.
It's amazing. Probably one word for it. It's so good. Aww. We live such a beautiful life over here. It's incredible. Archie has just flourished. He Aww. Is a busy, like, boisterous little boy, and he is chatting and talking and picks up on everything. We have amazing things on offer over here. We have such a beautiful community here and so many wonderful friends, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the community that we've built, the support network that we have around us, and I've never lent on them more or valued friendships more since having Archie, because he's changed our whole world and incredible, such a big transformation in only 2 short years. I think about it, I'm like, it's been 2 years of this life, and sometimes I'm like, where did that go? And like, other times I look at him and I'm like, whose kid is that? Like, it's he's mine, you know. I'm 2 years in and I'm like, everything that he knows and believes and trusts is from us and from the relationships that we have. And it's just beautiful. So good.
You are doing such an amazing job. My gosh, it's an absolute wonder to watch. Oh, you're amazing.
Thank you.
Jess, thank you so much for sharing your story and speaking so openly and honestly and for being so raw and vulnerable with us. It feels like such an honor to be let into your family's story. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having this amazing space and allowing people to share their stories and feeling like they can share parts of their life that they wouldn't share otherwise. And I think it normalizes things and it makes people feel included and that they have a voice. It's amazing. So beautiful.
Thank you, Jess. If you would like to see some photos of Jess and her gorgeous family, head on over to Kin by Charlotte on Instagram and you can have a look at those there. And if you're enjoying the show, be sure to subscribe or leave a review or share it with someone in your very own kin. I can't wait to bring you another beautiful episode next week.